970 WDAY, Monday morning, 11:08. And thank you for joining us. My name is Sandy Butweiler. I'll be your host for the next couple of hours. It has been a wild weekend. Travel ban in effect. We'll find out how that affects our Fargo's International Airport. That with Sean Doberstein coming up in just a few minutes here on 970. We're also going to visit with the regional manager from North Dakota's first opioid clinic in the noon hour. And the John Beer Grease race has begun. It began yesterday, Sunday morning. And we'll talk to one of the spokespeople about this annual event up north. And let's see, what else do we have going on? We have a lot going on today. And so much more. First, though, we're going to go right to the North Dakota legislature. But before we do that, good morning, Nateel.
Good morning. It's so busy today.
There's so much going on. I just can't keep it all straight. It's so busy.
Just got to do everything on Mondays.
France is banning restaurants from giving unlimited refills on soda and sugary drinks.
Massive downvote there for me.
I bet. And that's not all they're doing. I mean, that's not all they're doing. And so, and they don't even have that big of an obesity problem.
No, not like we do.
Not like we do. And so that's creating a lot of conversation on my social media this morning. And also, have you ever had food poisoning? And if it came from a restaurant, did you call the restaurant and tell them? And so that's creating a lot of activity. I had food poisoning this weekend.
Oh, gosh.
I think I'm still a little shaky, actually. It started Friday around 3 a.m.
Gross.
I'm not going to say the restaurant is, but I narrowed it down. I know exactly what it was or where it was. And so I haven't called them because what will they do? You know, I mean, maybe I could tell them. Well, so anyway, we'll get into that conversation a little later here on 970. Did you have a good weekend?
I did. I had a nice quiet weekend for a change. And that was good. And there were no football upsets. I was just chill. And, you know, next weekend's the Super Bowl.
Excellent. Well, it was going to be a very busy week for the North Dakota legislature. They have a lot of work to get done. And joining us right away this morning is from District 11, South Fargo, North Dakota Representative Gretchen Dobovich. Hello, Gretchen. Thanks for your time this morning. I know you guys are pretty busy out there.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
It's great to have you here. So I guess one of the first orders of business this week will be, is it House Bill 1263 that involves increasing the state's minimum wage to $9.25? How is that how is that going?
Well, as you would imagine, and the reviews are kind of mixed on it, you know, certainly employees for lower wage paying jobs who depend on them for their rent and their gas money and insurance and to feed their families are really looking forward to it. At the same time, there's also some concern about, is this a wage that North Dakota business owners can sustain? What kind of impact will it have? And also as consumers, will this be a huge increase in costs that are passed on to us in terms of goods and services as well? And so while we're looking at increasing that rate, you know, certainly what are the implications of that for everyone that would be involved?
What is the minimum wage now? Is it seven something?
It is seven something. off the top of my head, I can't recall it. I do know that South Dakota's is over $8 an hour, as is Minnesota's.
You know, I think what is challenging for people to understand about raising the minimum wage is that the cost of living obviously has gone up. Insurances, people who were out of work in the trade that they were trained in or getting laid off and not being able to find work in their field, for example. I mean, I remember this from many, many years ago now. And they either had to go back to school to learn a new trade or work in jobs that were minimum wage paying jobs. But the fact is that, and I don't know if you see it this way, but does this create sort of the working middle class poor by keeping the minimum wage so low?
I really don't know if that's the intention. You know, I know part of it is that with the wages being lower, costs are lower for employers as well as costs are lower for consumers. And I think that's a big part of it. The other piece is that change is fairly slow in North Dakota. And so people are really leery of what are the unintended consequences. I think one of the other issues around this bill that a lot of people may not think about is that in North Dakota, servers do not have to be paid minimum wage. There's an assumption that tips will make up that difference, and they are actually taxed on those. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Minnesota, servers are paid minimum wage in addition to their tips. And so for people who work in restaurants and bars, the implications for this bill are huge in terms of their earning power.
What do you think the chances are that this will pass?
I really don't have a good read on this one. There hasn't been a lot of conversation about it, and so it will just be really interesting to see who comes out for the hearing and what types of comments they have that may impact legislators to view this increase as what I see a really good thing. As you mentioned, the cost of living continues to go up, but our wages in North Dakota do not. And so we need to make sure that there's some balance there.
And Gretchen, when is the hearing again? And will that be in what committee does that come out of? I would think business and labor, I suppose.
It is in business and labor. It is not. I don't see it on the agenda right now as I'm flipping through it. I apologize. I'm not.
No, that's quite all right.
I'm not super prepared for this.
No, not at all. It looks like it's 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yes, House Bill 1263.
All right.
And then I'm looking at some of the other work that you guys are going to do. What's going on today, by the way?
Today in industry, business, and labor, we've been looking at one of the big bills that we're talking about right now is changing the grievance procedure for state employees. Right now, the procedure is that the person that you file your grievance with is your employer, and there's no intermediary, and how that may deter many people who have been truly discriminated against or have had, issues at work, it may deter them from going forward with the grievance procedure because there isn't that neutral intermediary.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at Wednesday this week, House Bill 1386. That would add sexual orientation and gender identity to the North Dakota Human Rights Act and North Dakota Fair Housing Act. Where do you stand on this? And it seems to me from just the citizen of North Dakota and South Fargo, I might add, that this is just, I'm afraid that there's part of the legislature who believe that this segment of the population can still be discriminated against in the state of North Dakota. I mean, if you have a gay son, daughter, niece, nephew, grandchild, anyone in the LGBT community, you wouldn't want them to stay in North Dakota with this, would you?
Absolutely. I agree with you. Since the Human Rights Bill was introduced the very first time, four sessions ago, I've been a huge supporter of it. This is my first session, but just as a citizen, would contact my legislators in support of it. It's unheard of to me that we would discriminate against any members of our society. And so this bill is long, long overdue. I also think it creates an economic issue for us in that for people who are gay, a lesbian, bisexual, transgender, who's going to want to not only stay in a state where they don't have basic human rights, but who's going to want to move here and work? Who's going to want to move here and go to school, buy a home, pay taxes? And so the implications for this bill are far-reaching.
So, this one was up, I can't remember what it was called 2 years ago, but this is now, the second? How many times has this been up for a vote in the North Dakota legislature?
This is the fourth time this has been up for a vote.
It's the fourth time?
Yes.
Oh my gosh! So what are you up against? Are you up against sort of the Murdahls of the world? Janae Murdahl is also a representative?
She's a senator.
She's a senator, but you know, all of these workings are going on behind the scenes. These sort of religious opinions that go into these kinds of decisions, and you know, she is sort of at the heart of that in some ways. I had a conversation with her a couple of weeks ago. Now she's not going to go on the air with me, but what are you up against when it comes to fighting this kind of discrimination in the state? And how do you win? How does the LGBT community win?
You know, I've received emails, I've received postcards from people who are aligned with the Catholic Conference and some other religious organizations regarding voting against this bill. And, you know, I think the more people who come out and testify and send letters to their legislators saying, this is my story and this impacts me. And I think not just the LGBT community. This is a North Dakota issue. Mm-hmm. And so I think when businesses can talk about how this is impacting me, when neighbors can say, this is how this impacts my neighbor, when families say, this is how this is impacting my child. Mm-hmm. I think that may be what helps turn this from what some view as a religious issue into what it is. It's a human rights issue.
Gretchen Dobrovich is our guest this morning. I know you have a busy morning, and I thank you for the time that you've given me today. I know on Friday, House Bill 1427 that requires the state to track and report on refugees and new Americans in the state allows the state to limit or oppose resettlement of refugees. That coming out of the House Government and Veteran Affairs Committee, that one coming up on Friday, February 3rd. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your good work, Gretchen. And we'll talk again, I'm sure. I'll let you get back to your busy day.
All right. Thank you, Sandy. Have a great day.
You
bye.
Too. 1120 at 970 WDAY. Couple of questions of the day. What do you think about France banning unlimited soda refills to fight obesity? And have you ever had food poisoning from a restaurant, and did you call the restaurant to tell them, and what did they tell you? 1120, Sean Doberstein from the Fargo Airport joins us next on 970 WDAY. WDAY. President Trump signed an executive order on Friday night to keep refugees from entering the country for 120 days and immigrants from seven predominantly Muslim nations out for 3 months. The countries affected are Iran, Iraq, Syria, Sudan, Libya, Yemen, and Somalia. This is the extreme vetting that Donald Trump promised during the campaign, but it still seems to have caught people by surprise. In fact, Donald Trump and his team never consulted with or ran the order by the Justice Department and Homeland Security officials. So how does this affect you flying into Fargo, North Dakota? Sean Doberstein is the executive director of the Fargo Airport Authority and gives us a little inside look into how our local airport will handle this ban. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Sandy.
How are you? Did you have a good weekend?
I did. How about you?
Very nice. Very nice.
Good.
So were you alerted of this ban at the airport, and how were you, if you were?
Yeah, we were through Homeland Security, specifically Customs, and then through the Airport Association that we're part of. Airports across the country belong to the American Association of Airports, and they have sent out some information, basically everything that you've seen on the national media or even local media regarding the impact, I guess, if you will, and so forth with the ban.
Mm-hmm. So if you could, then do we have our own Homeland Security people here or at the airport, or how does that work? Because we are an international airport, right?
Yeah, Department of Homeland Security has two different agencies that report to them here at the airport. One is the Transportation Security Administration, which you see at the checkpoint in the blue shirts. Then we have Customs and Border Protection, which has an office up in our North General Aviation area by Fargo Jet Center that clears corporate and general aviation flights that enter the country.
Mm-hmm.
And choose Fargo for refueling and so forth. But they typically do not deal with passengers from the seven countries that have been identified. In terms of passengers arriving here in Fargo, they would have already pre-cleared customs at one of the connecting hubs, such as Dallas, Chicago, Denver, Minneapolis, or Atlanta, that feed passengers to Fargo. So that's where they would be intercepted. But if you're passengers from these seven countries that have been identified and you hold dual passports, either U.S. or European, you'd be allowed to enter the United States if they present their U.S. or European passport.
Mm-hmm.
Refugees from countries traveling on Canadian or refugee documents that plan to transfer flights in the United States will be denied entry. Those refugees that have Canadian refugee documents have to fly directly into Canada. I haven't been in touch with anyone yet from North Dakota State or MSUM or Concordia, UND, mm-hmm. with all the international student population there, but I would suspect that they have been advised, as a number of people have, is just to stay in the country versus running the risk of maybe not getting back in.
Right. In fact, I just read this morning, Kathy Coyle posted the story that the University of North Dakota has advised their international students to stay in America until the travel screening process is more defined, and that also includes scrubbing trips to nearby Canada.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, yeah. And I would imagine...
That's good advice.
I would imagine our other universities will do the same.
I believe so. I saw some national news reports basically advising those in higher education and others of that, and I think that's good advice to follow at this point until the situation continues to evolve and more information is known and maybe the policy becomes a little bit more clear.
How do you think, how was this handled? I mean, was it handled in a way that it was easy for you, the airport, to follow the rules of this ban? Because it seems like it caused a lot of chaos in bigger airports, but we are a smaller airport, a smaller hub, so it probably didn't create the kind of chaos it did at other larger airports.
Yeah, no, certainly no chaos here because we don't have customs right here in the terminal building itself. Like I say, they handle corporate and general aviation. They're not handling passengers from America, Delta, or United, or any of the other commercial carriers here at the airport. So, but it would have caused some disruption, obviously, and has caused some disruption that you've seen nationally at LaGuardia and Chicago, Dallas, all of the international airports that have customs and international flights certainly have been mm-hmm. dealing with this. But as time goes on here in the not-too-distant future, as they vet passengers before they board at an international airport bound for the United States, it should be resolving itself fairly soon so you don't have a number of people held in customs locations. And
mm-hmm.
I would suspect by, today, tomorrow, or certainly by the middle part of this week, that it'll become less of an issue there.
Sean Doberstein, any protesters out at the airport since Friday?
No, none whatsoever.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I wouldn't think so. Sean, thank you. Appreciate it. And again, for students, international students, I'm sure they've been guided by their universities as to how to handle this ban, whether or not they should leave the country or not, and whether or not they'll get back in. Sean, thank you. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Sandy.
You bet.
Take care. Bye.
Time is 11:30. We're all over the place this morning. We go to the John Bear Grease race in the next half hour here on 970. That began yesterday. Big tradition up in northern Minnesota. And we'll have details for you. Hear how that race is going. News with Eric is next. So if you want me off your back. WDAY 1139, the John Bear Grease race is going on in the North Shore, Beaver Bay, and we'll have details on it coming up. Hopefully, we're trying to contact one of the spokespeople. Jason Rice will join us, hopefully, here in just a few minutes. Nateel is working on getting in touch with him. Also, you might have caught the Minot Daily News story in the paper this morning. The CMS regional manager, that is the first opioid clinic in North Dakota, has opened and it is doing good work, and we will talk with the regional manager about this new and first opioid clinic in the state of North Dakota. Also, a couple of questions on social media this morning asking you about food poisoning. Have you ever had food poisoning? I'm pretty sure when you're sick and you wish, you're hoping that, well, let's see, how can I put this nicely? I mean, if you've ever had food poisoning, and I've had it twice, and I, honest to God, I thought I was going to die. I mean, it is awful. And I know where I got it. I got it from a restaurant. It's a local restaurant in Fargo. I haven't called them, but my question to you was, should I call? Should I tell them? Carol says, of course. Andy writes, yes, I did several years ago from a restaurant in Fargo. I did call them. They were not very friendly, but they weren't very friendly about it, but did take my call. Okay, cool. Deanna writes, I did years ago during that nationwide spinach problem. I called the restaurant and they were very glad to know. Because what happened is it was something that was undercooked from the kitchen and I should have sent it back and I didn't. And it involved eggs. So it was my fault. I mean, I should have sent it back. I should have just not even given it a second thought. But no, no, I didn't want to be, you know, I thought, well, maybe this is a new way of making this dish. I don't know. So I had a bit of it and then I realized very quickly that wow, this was not, I don't think this was how it was supposed to look or taste or feel. So I ate a little bit and sure enough, about 3 a.m, you know, and it hits you like a ton of bricks. I mean, I literally woke up in a cold sweat and I was down all weekend with it. It's crazy. Ashley writes, yes, from a romantic seafood dinner on my honeymoon. Oh no. Oh, that's terrible. Let's see. Gloria says, yes, call the restaurant and you should report them to the proper authorities so no one else gets sick. Jen says, yes, DQ Chicken Strip Basket. Called them in 1997 and haven't gone back since. All right. Susan writes, yes, called them after going to the ER. They really didn't care. They have many restaurants in town. Jill says, yep, all three of us got it and they couldn't have cared less. Sad, actually. I should have sent them the bill for 3 people's ER visit. Not cool. I was close to going in, but, you know, I figured, oh, it'll pass. You know, I'm fine. I'm not that sick. I'm just going to, you know, chill out and try to get some sleep and just try to get a lot of fluids in me and try to work through it. But, you know, this can last up to like 10 days. Have you ever had food poisoning there, young lady?
I have. I haven't ever had it bad enough that it's lasted like the full 10 days. Mm-hmm. But I've gotten sick for a couple days.
What happened? Or what, do you know what it was?
It was undercooked meat.
From a restaurant?
Yeah.
And did you tell them?
I did not. Because when I got sick, I get little stomach bugs fairly frequently. And I don't know. I've just never had a great immune system. And so I figured I had just caught something. But then by like day 2.5, I was like, no, this isn't normal. This is no way normal.
Did you have the accompanying bodily functions with it as
well? Oh, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that was the only thing that cued me in because it was lasting for multiple days and I was mm-hmm. just getting no relief. But
the first time I got food poisoning, it was my own fault. And seriously, it was the dumbest thing ever. I had put mayonnaise on a sandwich. It was a 90 degree day. I was trying to bring my lunch to work. I was on location for a broadcast. I threw it in the back of my bag.
Oh no. And the mayo went bad.
Yes.
Oh no.
Oh boy. And then, you know, I thought I'm dying when it hit
yeah.
me. I mean, I thought I'm going to die in the middle of this broadcast. And because it came over so quickly. So that's why I wondered if this really was food poisoning because it took a while. But there was nothing else. I mean, I had all the symptoms of food poisoning. So it had to be. But by the time the mayonnaise hit me, I had to go on a client call.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. And so I walked into the business and I couldn't get to the bathroom fast enough. And then you heard me throwing up and I was so sick. And I was deathly ill. really seriously sick.
So the lesson learned here is don't put mayo on a sandwich that's not staying in the fridge.
That's it. And I don't eat mayo. I can't eat it.
Oh, no.
No, yuck.
That's not entirely true. I love Miracle Whip, which is different than mayo.
Miracle Whip, I think, is... I mean, I don't mind Miracle Whip.
I like Miracle Whip. It's zesty.
Janet says, Sandy, call. Feel better. Let's see. Laurel writes, you can call, too, with your experience. 293-9000, 888-970-9329. Did you have any luck getting our Bear Grease dude?
He was out at the chute, which is what they call where the sleds go off.
Okay.
So they had sent someone down to get him, and he should be calling us back here any minute.
Excellent. Good, good. We'll maybe what we should... Well, let's take an early break, and then maybe we'll have more time for him.
That sounds good.
So let's see. Aaron writes, wait, let me get back. Bob writes, I did, and they responded that they thought I was trying to get a free meal. They're out of business. Aaron writes, twice, once from clam strips at a bar and another from undercooked chicken in a sub shop.
It's always the undercooked chicken. It's never undercooked beef, but chicken. Good Lord.
He said he didn't go to the hospital for either, so didn't report it. Let's see. Laurel says, yes, and I got a free meal, just what I wanted. Mary Beth says, got you once, get you twice. Not a good sign. I've been lucky and not gotten sick from restaurant food here in the FM area. Let's see. Melissa says her husband did in college. It was horrible. He was a student. He was at Student Health and was interviewed on TV for it. And let's see. Donna says she got it at a Chinese buffet in Fargo. Don't call them because I didn't go to the doctor. Oh, she didn't call them because she didn't go to the doctor. Okay, cool. So there you go, a little food poisoning conversation. And how did you get through it? I'd love to know. 293-9000, 888-970-9329, or talk at WDAY.com. At your comments, your calls, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to the Bear Grease Race spokesperson coming up next. Me, 970 WDAY, a couple of emails into the studio. Let's see. This one comes in from Fish Whisperer. I had to have my stomach pumped from someone not washing their hands after using the bathroom while handling my food. I thought I was going to die. I got so sick, contacted the restaurant, and they paid my bill. Several more emails into the studio about food poisoning, and I'll get to those as soon as I can. But Jason Rice joins us now from the John Bear Grease Sled Dog Race and Marathon. And hello, Jason. Thank you for joining us in Fargo this morning.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm glad you guys are interested in following along with the Bear Grease.
Absolutely. Of course, I'm looking at you've got a great Facebook page. Lots of great video to see as well. Where are you right now?
I'm only hearing bits and pieces of you.
Uh-oh.
There we go. Just speak up.
Okay.
Turn the mix up for me.
All right. There you go. Let's see. There you go. Arnatiel, she is taking care of that.
There we go. I'm hearing you good now. Thank
excellent.
You.
Excellent. So, Jason, before we get into the 2017 race, tell us who John Bear Grease was, if you would.
So, John Bear Grease was an Anishinaabe tribal member of the Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, and he lived and carried the mail in the late 1800s. From about 1879 to 1899, he was carrying mail and packages up the north shore of Lake Superior, roughly from two harbors up to Grand Portage, and he was doing that trip about once a week with a team of dogs that were probably, it would vary between five and, eight or so dogs. And he had a big, heavy toboggan-type sled, and he was hauling as much as 700 pounds of packages and the U.S. mail. He was really the link to the outside world for people living in the fishing villages along the north shore of Lake Superior. Of course, there's a lovely, gorgeous highway, National Scenic Byway, Highway 61 there now, but there was no road then. It was just kind of a path that Bear Grease and his brothers had made to take horses to deliver the mail during the spring and summer. Then in the wintertime, of course, it was his famous dog sled team, and he was known to be very reliable delivering the mail by dog sled.
I bet he was. When did this race begin? Who started it?
The race began in 1980, and there was a group of mushers who had been holding a race up in the Grand Marais area in far northern Minnesota for quite some time. And there was in the 70s, there was a lot of local interest in mushing, dog sled racing up here in the Gunflint region. So we're talking about the Grand Marais area, basically.
Sure.
And one day, a radio station from Duluth, WDSM 710 Country, they're still in existence today. They said they stepped forward and said, "We really like this concept and we want to make it bigger and longer and we want to be your sponsor." And they wound up extending it, having it run down to Duluth. It used to start up north in the early days, and now, of course, we start further on the south end. We work our way up to the Canadian border up at Grand Portage and come on back down to Duluth. So it's kind of reversed, but over the years we've seen people like Doug Swingley, Dee Dee Johnroe, Susan Butcher, Libby Riddles, huge names in the mushing world, especially when you look at the Iditarod list of champions over time. These people have all come here. They're part of our history.
Excellent. I hear that the course is pretty fast this year.
It is. For the most part, there are where actually the groomers went out and helped break up the ice, and that actually made the snow a little bit looser on top. So once they got it groomed and, you know, knocked down those really crusty chunks of ice and snow, that was probably a friendly thing to do for the dog's feet, but it did loosen it up, which tends to slow it down just a hair. That's not the whole trail, but some certain parts. And then, of course, we're expecting some snow now tonight. That will change things perhaps to the slow side, depending on how much, but they're talking about as much as 5 inches of snow.
Oh, my. So how long does this race usually last?
Typically, well, we start on the same day every year, so we start on the last Sunday of January, and we start at 11 o'clock, the first marathon team left. We anticipate the winner somewhere probably around the 8 o'clock hour. Of course, you know, strategies and weather and trail conditions can change that, but our best estimate puts the winner in this year on Wednesday morning, so just 2 days away, Wednesday morning, somewhere around 8 a.m.
Are there checkpoints along the way where they stay, where they rest the animals, where they get some sleep, or
Absolutely. And really, the dogs getting sleep is really the number one priority. Mm-hmm. The mushers always put the dogs rest first, and so you're seeing some pretty pretty grizzled and tired-looking mushers. It'll start about tonight. You'll start to see them look a little bit haggard. However, when they get to Grand Portage tonight, to that checkpoint, okay, so we've had three checkpoints so far for the marathon. Mm-hmm. They'll hit the roughly halfway point at the Grand Portage Lodge and Casino in Grand Portage, Minnesota. That'll be the checkpoint, and they've got an 8-hour mandatory rest, which is going to be a nice break for them. They'll probably get to sleep for maybe 4 hours of that, because bear in mind, when they get in there, they've got to feed the dogs, they've got to water them, they massage them, they check all of the their feet to make sure that they don't have any cuts or sore spots or abrasions. And then the musher will finally get some rest after that.
It looks, from the pictures that I'm looking at, and your Facebook page is excellent, and it's really good. I see these little red sort of slippers on their paws. Is that what I'm seeing?
Yeah, of course, those are called booties, and dog booties are something that mushers use. I think a lot of people misunderstand what booties are for. Booties don't necessarily protect a lot from, say, a stick or a rock. They'll provide a little bit of protection. Sled dogs, the booties are really important to stop snow and ice from building up in the web between each of their toe pads. Their toe pads are very, very tough, brilliant. So the toe pads can handle a lot of abuse, but that soft, fleshy tissue in the web cannot handle a whole lot of ice chunks and so forth. That's what you want to protect, and that's what booties do.
How many mushers are in the marathon?
We have 12 in the marathon this year, and we've got, I think I'm at Trail Center right now in the middle of the Gunflint Trail. Wonderful place to come visit any time of year. We've got, I think, a couple more people still resting here, and then they will be headed off on about a 58-mile run or so to go up to Grand Portage. And that'll take them Approximately 5 hours to get up to the midway point and that 8-hour rest that they're looking forward to.
All right, very good. Jason Rice, a spokesman for the 2017 John Bear Grease Marathon. Thank you for your time, and we'll be watching and from Fargo, North Dakota. And I thank you for your time, Jason. Have a great, great week.
Oh, thanks, Andy. You too.
Thanks. WDAY, a couple of more emails into the studio on food poisoning. We don't have to talk about this during the noon hour, but Barb writes, this is, oh, she said it's really gross. Oh, yeah, yeah, no, 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 I'm not going to talk about that.
No, no, no.
Oh, my
you
goodness.
You sounded
sakes.
Like 100% Norwegian right there.
Did
Sandy.
I?
No, 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 no.
I can't talk about things growing in someone's tummy. I just can't do it. But thanks, Barb, for the email to the studio. Sandy, I think you need to call the restaurant. My mother-in-law died from food poisoning. She was 70 years old and came in contact with undercooked hamburger. It was E. coli 0157, which later turned into a blood disorder, which shut down her system, and she had kidney failure. Your phone call could save a life. Yeah, I think I will. I mean, I don't want anything. I mean, I think it would be important to whoever the cook was on Friday that they would, you know, that they could tell the cook that was on duty, and maybe it was a new cook, for example, and didn't quite know, you know, how to cook yet, or at least completely cook something. And so there you go. Coming up today here on 970 WDAY in the 3 o'clock hour, Jay Thomas is going to talk with Mike Wright, and he's going to be in the studio this afternoon at 3 o'clock. And that, of course, the West Fargo beleaguered chief of police. And he will be in studio with Jay Thomas at 3 o'clock today here on 970 WDAY. So tune in for that. It should be an interesting conversation. I believe it's I know that the forum have reporters have spoken to him a time or two, but Jay will have some extended time to spend with the Chief Wrighton coming up in the 3 o'clock hour here on 970 WDAY. Well, North Dakota's first opioid clinic is up and running, and it's busy. It's doing great work. The regional manager of CMS is Mark Schaefer, and he joins me now on 970 WDAY. Hello, Mark.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I appreciate it. So when did you get this opioid clinic up and running?
We opened actually in August of 2016.
And tell us how it works, if you would.
Absolutely. So we have clients coming in who have addictions with opioids, such as the prescription pills or heroin, and they've generally had the addiction for a year or longer. They call in. We do a screening. We do an admission process with a doctor, a counselor. We have a nurse on staff. And once they've gone through all of the assessment process and they've determine kind of what treatment they're going to do. The biggest difference we see in our clinic compared to most outpatient addiction services is the medication-assisted treatment, and that's the methadone that is administered on a daily basis for clients, and that helps them with the withdrawal from opioids and mm-hmm. also with the cravings.
Is it an inpatient or is it or not?
It's outpatient.
It is. And yeah. We should make note that there are more than 2 million Americans that are dependent on or abusing prescription drugs. Deaths from prescription opioids such as hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, codeine have quadrupled in the United States since 1999. And because of the increase in the prescription opioids, and that from the Center for Disease Control. What age group of people do you see, Mark?
We see a pretty wide range, anywhere from 18 to 19-year-olds up to 60, 62 years old. Quite a spread.
And so how long does this, how long does the program last? I mean, how long does it take to get someone who is addicted no longer addicted?
Absolutely. That's an excellent question. And we generally like to say it's not 1 minute longer than necessary. There's a wide range for what works best for people, how long it takes for them. In general, we look at our kind of mile markers at around 90 days is kind of our first spot that we want to look at with individuals, where they're going to do better if they can stay in treatment for 90 days. Up to a year is very typical. 2 years, actually, is where we see some of the best results for people. Mm. And part of that is that you're not just addressing the medical and the physical addiction to that, but you're really dealing with all of those issues that led up to the addiction in the first place. For some people, they can wean off, and also when they're addressing some of those issues, they will wean off of that and stop much sooner than that. For others, it can be a lifetime. That's a small minority for that across the United States, but mm-hmm. there are some who it will be a lifetime treatment.
Is heroin involved in any way? I mean, those addicted to heroin, because sometimes that's what happens. They go to that because it's less expensive. They don't get the prescriptions that they need. Is that part of the program too? Or is it just opioids?
We've seen it does involve heroin as far as people who have addictions to heroin. And exactly as you said, for some people it may become too expensive for the opioids, for the prescription drugs. They also, the doctors are working hard to not continue to prescribe when they do see that there's an issue. And previously there wasn't a whole lot that they could do. They would have to cut those people off. And then it can sometimes lead to, or they may take that next step if heroin is the only thing they can get, even though it definitely has a stigma worse than other drugs for many people in North Dakota, across the United States, but also we see then people who are still have not taken that step to the heroin and mm-hmm. have just used the prescription drugs and are looking to get away from that as well.
What about the early stages of withdrawal? Do you deal with that as well?
We generally see people, I would say, not as a hard fact, but around half and half of our intakes, some who are actively using. And so we do a urinalysis, a drug test when they come in to see what kind of drugs might be in their system. And then we have some who have been trying to withdraw. And so they're right in those early stages of withdrawal where they're sick in the clinic. Mm-hmm. It's an intense process where we get them in. Usually with that first dose, they might still experience some craving, but it's going to take care of for about 24 hours that withdrawal, mm-hmm. and then they're coming into the clinic every day to get that medication so that they don't go back into withdrawal.
Are you finding that medication is the best solution? I mean, because there are several that you can use, right?
There are. So, yes, as far as the treatment of opioid addictions, including heroin, medication-assisted treatment is definitely the gold standard, and that comes from federal guidelines from SAMHSA. We currently in Minot use methadone, and we're working towards Suboxone, which is a very similar drug that has some people respond better to methadone, some people respond better to Suboxone or buprenorphine. There is also Vivitrol, which actually is acts a little bit differently. The first two are agonists. They work the same as the opioids, mm-hmm. and the Vivitrol actually works against that. But for most people, they have to be completely free of any opioids for 7 to 14 days before they can take the Vivitrol, and so it's very difficult. It works really well for a prison population where they're going to be through that stage already.
Mm-hmm. Do you is there any, I guess, similarities between treating opioid abuse, an opioid addiction, and treating alcoholism, Mark?
I think, you know, definitely with the aspects of the counseling, I mean, we have mm-hmm. addiction counselors, and they determine the level of placement based on the assessment. And so they're looking at what led up to the addiction, what is causing that to continue. The biggest difference we see is just that extreme withdrawal, but also, and maybe worse, is some of the dysphoria that comes from years of abusing the opioids and the heroin, where people are no longer even getting high. They're not, they're just trying to keep from getting sick.
Right. All right. Mark, do you have time to hang around with me for a few more minutes for another segment?
Absolutely.
Good. This is Mark Schaefer. He is with CMS. He is the regional manager. What does CMS stand for, by the way, Mark?
Community Medical Services.
Excellent. It has been open in Minot now for some months, and we'll talk about the success of this first clinic in North Dakota. And is it available to all North Dakotans? That and more coming up on Midday Live. Well, 970 WDAY, the Minot facility, North Dakota's first opioid treatment clinic using drug therapy with methadone to assist in client recovery. You might have caught Jill Schramm's story from the Minot Daily News in the forum this morning, posted last night at inforum.com. And the point of the story is that this Community Medical Services has seen its client base grow. Mark Schaefer is the CMS regional manager and joins us for another segment. Mark, thanks again. You guys operate other methadone clinics, right?
Yes. Community Medical Services actually started in Arizona in 1983. There's four clinics there. We also have four clinics in Montana and one in Alaska, Wasilla.
And one, and you are setting one up in Fargo. When is that scheduled to open, Mark?
It's in the initial stages. We have the building and have been working with the city quite a bit. The city's been great working with us. And so we're hoping within the next 4 months or so, just depending upon licenses coming through.
And are your clients mostly from North Dakota or only from North Dakota?
I would say from North Dakota, 99%. We've very rarely had someone who maybe traveled to North Dakota for work and was at a clinic in another state, and so they may have done what we call guest dosing. But vast majority are North Dakota residents.
Is methadone addicting? I mean, is that like just a different kind of heroin? What does methadone actually do?
Absolutely. So methadone is, I would differentiate addiction from dependence. So medically, yes, a person would develop a dependence upon it. It doesn't have the addictive properties that heroin or misuse of prescription drugs might have. So a person, it's hitting the same receptors that in the brain that are causing them not to have the withdrawal, but they're not getting the high that you would typically associate with an illicit drug. It also lasts much longer. So when someone does heroin, it might last for a very limited amount of time. And so they're doing that several times throughout the day. With the methadone, they're not getting high, and then it's lasting for those 24 hours or longer where they can function normally and aren't getting those feelings where they have to search out and find more.
You have in the story from Jill this morning talks about the fact that you've had quite a large growth of people. I mean, 53 people since starting up in August?
Yes, and we've had close to 70 who have come through the doors, and either they may have transferred to other for other facilities or for inpatient or have perhaps moved out of state. And so we've seen a large growth. It was faster than what was expected. Community Medical Services, you know, with as many clinics as they have, they've really gotten down what needs to happen and how to make sure that clients are taken care of. And they just saw a faster growth here than they had expected.
Isn't that interesting? North Dakota is not immune, are we? Other states, of course, have opioid clinics and are dealing with a far larger issue than we are in North Dakota. But still, nonetheless, we have had some really difficult times and the loss of young men and women in our communities over this. Can you share with us maybe a success story and what worked? Because I think that if you don't understand it or if you don't, it appears that it is that is, it's very, very difficult to get off of. So what works? What has worked for your clients?
Right. That's an excellent point, too, is it is very difficult. And that's one of the things that differentiates this from many of the other drugs that people can become addicted to. But we have seen, as an example, you know, being open as short a time as we have, we haven't had anyone completely move off of that. But what we have seen is, for example, we have an individual came in, was not working, couldn't work, had lost their rights to be with their children, and we're really just kind of at the end of their rope. Mm-hmm. Often people come in, and same here, where they said, you know, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. And for this person, one, within 3 days, we just saw a different person, a different personality, that it was really their true personality we saw, where this was a hardworking, kind person, but under that influence just could not break out of it. Within a few weeks, they had gotten their job, gotten a job, were working, and have been doing now all of the things that they needed to do to get reunification with their family, with their mm-hmm. children, but also repairing some of those broken bridges that they had with other family that had happened throughout the drug use. And so it's really looking at people who are in our community who are struggling right now and being able to get back, being productive, but also just having a higher quality of life. And for them, you know, some are at a point where they say, I don't know when I'll be ready to move away from that. Right now, this works for me, the counseling, mm-hmm. the daily contact. And others say, you know, I think I'm at a point where I can start moving away from this, and I'm doing well, and I think I can handle that.
Is there a cost, Mark?
Yes. For us in North Dakota, it's $85 per week, and that covers all of the costs. So when they mm-hmm. come in and see the doctor, the counselor, the nurse, all of those costs are rolled up into that weekly fee. And so whether they come in 3 times a week to see a counselor or once every 2 weeks to see a counselor, those costs stay the same.
Sure. And just one final question. How have you been, welcomed with open arms in Minot?
You know, I know that 3 years ago when they first looked at it, there was a moratorium put into place, and the city did a great job. I'm from Minot, so I think of it as my town as well, and it was difficult, but the city did a good job of really researching it, looking at the effectiveness of medication-assisted treatment, and once they opened that door to say this is okay to come in, it's been just great. The North Central Human Services has been excellent. The state has really assisted and also just been very clear up front with expectations. So it has the community. The biggest problem I usually tell people I have is not addressing any issues we have in the community. It's more making sure people know that we are here.
And one other thing, Mark, the Fargo Clinic, you said it could open maybe in late spring, maybe early summer?
Correct.
Okay, and that will be managed by you guys as well?
Yes, it will. So everything Wonderful. That I've talked about today would be the same.
Wow, good work. Whatever we can do, because, man, this is tough, isn't it? I mean, this is rough times. And thank you so much for your good work, and thanks for joining us today. If people are interested in finding out more about this clinic in Minot, how should they get a hold of you guys?
Yes, they can go to communitymedicalservices.org, or they can contact us directly at 701-858-1801.
Excellent. Mark Schaefer, CMS Regional Manager in Minot, talking about the rapid growth in clients at the opioid clinic, the only and first opioid clinic in North Dakota, and one coming to Fargo soon. Mark Schaefer, CMS Regional Manager. Thank you, Mark. We'll talk again as we get closer to the Fargo opening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. 1231 at 970 WDAY. George H.W. Bush is out of the hospital. Good news. And news is next. WDAY time is 12:40. Are you picking anybody in the Super Bowl this weekend, Nateel Falk?
I want the Falcons to win. So I have this difficult situation because I want the Falcons to win because I want vengeance on the Patriots. But at the same time, I want the Patriots to win so that I can say, well, obviously the Steelers lost because the Patriots were the champions this year. It's fine if we lose to the champions. It sucks to lose to the runner-up.
Yeah, no
But at
kidding.
The same time, I want the vengeance, Sandy.
Right, vengeance. Oh, you got to let it go.
I don't know if I'll let it go eventually. I'm still just a little worked up about it.
One of my friends. By the way, I should mention this, that this coming weekend is the final weekend for Other Desert Cities at the FMCT. Saw it on Friday night. It's really good. One thing about productions in our town, what I notice so much is that every actor on the stage is strong. And in this production, again, every actor on that stage is so good. And it's very entertaining, great local theater. And so call the FMCT where there's not a bad seat in the house and get your tickets for Other Desert Cities, which is running through, I believe they have a matinee on Sunday, and then they have shows on Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30, and then a Sunday matinee. So get your tickets and enjoy Other Desert Cities. Okay, here's a choose your news topic since we just have time to chat for a while here.
Got some chat time.
Yes, all right. Let's see. This silly website, Pop Sugar. Do you know what Pop Sugar
is?
Yeah,
I know
what
Pop Sugar is.
Blah, blah, blah. It's kind of a...
It's like an online magazine. It's sort of like what I would say Cosmo used to be.
Right.
But it's on the internet now.
It's on the internet.
As opposed to
exactly.
being like on a magazine stand.
So they did a study and on millennials.
Everybody loves to study my generation, Sandy.
All right, so...
Are you going to get me feisty?
No, yeah, I am. Well, we can do both of these topics. Okay, let's start with this one. And then we'll go to what's going on in France. Lots of comments, too, on social media from my friends about their ban on unlimited soda refills to fight obesity. And that's not all. They're taking out all of those vending machines in schools. And they're also going to, they've also imposed a sugar tax. And let's see, what else have they done? I mentioned a ban on vending machines in school, and they have limited the amount of servings of French fries to once a week in schools. Now, this is in France. Okay.
So. Yeah, I think that's probably okay. Your kids don't need to have French fries more than once a week in school. And if, you know, I don't know about the vending machines thing, though. I mean, maybe soda vending machines. But when I was in school, we liked to have the vending machines around because sometimes, you know, if I was getting ready, like if I was stuck after school for my sister's basketball practices or something like that, I wanted something to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't going to drink out of the water fountain for 2 hours. So, you know, having like Gatorades or juices or things like that in a vending machine, mm-hmm. I think is fine.
And this isn't just soda. It's sugary drinks as well.
Which I think Gatorade would count as.
Right.
Which, meh. France, where the land of where nobody gets to have any fun anymore.
I remember when Gatorade came out, and I think my brother was playing high school football at the time, and we had these giant jugs of lime Gatorade in the fridge.
Lime is the worst.
Yeah, well, that's what he drank.
Gross.
All the time. And, you know, and then he coached, too, so that was, we always, always had Gatorade for him. So maybe that's kind of, you do Gatorade?
I like Powerade more than Gatorade. I think Powerade has a little bit more flavor, but I only like the red ones.
Okay.
I'm weird.
All right. So let's go back to the millennial thing for just a moment.
Okay. I'm ready. What are they studying?
For those of you who are wondering what ages are consider you a millennial, 16 to 36.
16 is awfully young for a millennial now.
That's
I don't think 16-year-olds are millennials anymore. I'd say somewhere in like the 18 to 20-ish to like
30, 35. Okay. Well, so this study found that when people ages, well, in this study, 16 to 36 were asked what three words they thought best describes millennials.
Ooh.
Do you want to know what the most common word suggested was?
Was it jaded?
No.
So it's not jaded.
No.
Indebted.
No.
Darn.
Entitled.
Oh.
I know. They were asked, some of the study participants, why
They asked millennials to describe their generation?
Yes.
And millennials described themselves as entitled?
Yes.
That's really crummy, because what that says to me is that this hatred that millennials get from older generations is now infecting my generation, because they believe that our generation now considers itself to be entitled. But I bet if you were to ask those individuals,
sure,
if they felt that they as an individual were entitled, they would have said no.
Well, what these participants said was that the problem with their generation is that everyone thinks they're special. Because there are too many unqualified idiots going to college and then expecting to be set for life with no further effort. They found that more than 10% of those who described millennials as entitled said they viewed the word as neutral, not negative. Maybe that's why. They said they were more likely to see entitlement not as the world owing them something they might not have earned, but as the right to go after big goals without asking for permission from anyone. So that's an interesting description of that, don't you think?
But that's not what the definition of entitled is. That's not what entitled means.
So what's your
being
definition?
Entitled to something means that you believe that someone or something owes you something. Owes you the specific thing without having to really do anything to get it. That's what entitlement is. It's not putting in the work or the effort to get the thing that you feel you deserve.
Why do you think that millennials describe themselves this way? You know, sometimes I wonder, did you grow up in the era where if you did a somersault, your parents said that was, you know, oh, look, you know, you did the best somersault ever. Or if you came in 10th place in something, oh, but you were a winner. You know, sort of that fault, you know, that everything they do is perfect. Everything they do is funny. Everything they do is cute. You know, oh, good job, good job, good job, good job. I mean, if I heard my dad say that once or twice, maybe, you know, not really, but you see what I mean? I mean, when we were growing up, everybody had more kids than they do now. And so is it our fault? Is it the baby boomers' fault for bringing up the millennials in a way where everything they did, even if they didn't win something, they still got a ribbon and they still were winners? Or was detrimental, do you think?
Yeah, if you want to talk about the special snowflake syndrome everybody gets a trophy syndrome, mm-hmm. that's your guys' fault.
Yeah, right.
That's the baby boomers' fault. Because we didn't ask for the trophies. Mm-hmm. But like we were children. We didn't ask for it. We were parented in that way. And so the result is some of what you're seeing now. None of us asked for a trophy.
Did your parents do that?
No.
Were they like that with you?
No, oh. I didn't get a trophy for everything. I mean, like my mother was always very good to, because I was always really hard on myself and I was a perfectionist. So if I didn't get first place or if I didn't do perfectly on an exam or something like that, I had to be reminded that it's okay to make a mistake. I wasn't ever told that like I wasn't making mistakes or that, you know, it was that I had done perfectly and that it was the test's fault, mm-hmm. or I wasn't being fairly evaluated. But I had to be taught that it was okay to make a mistake, which was a different struggle for me.
Right. You know, I think that it's an interesting description when they say that the way they describe being entitled is not that someone owes them something that they haven't earned, but they have the right to go after bigger goals without asking permission from anyone. But who does? I mean, who does ask permission for anyone? You work hard.
Well, and that doesn't seem like the word entitled to me. I don't know what word would describe that. I mean, I like that description. I think that that's a good thing.
You know, I wonder if what they mean in a way is, you know, when you've, you know, if you're a baby boomer, for example, and you've been working hard for, you know, 40, 45 years, whatever it is, and, you know, you work so hard to get to a point in your life where you can make more money, you advance in your career, but it takes years to get there in some cases, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes things fall in your lap and you're great at it and you've reached that goal like that. But do you think that might be what they're trying to say? Or I guess I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out.
I'm not sure.
Well, anyway, there you go. That's the millennial story of the day. We'll take a break. Come back. I'll share some of these emails with you. Barb says, Nateel, vengeance promises much but gives nothing.
Football, vengeance is everything.
Do you even care about the game? I don't care about the game. Do you?
I don't know. I'm sure I'll watch it.
Because and Lady Gaga.
I like Lady Gaga.
Oh, yeah. I've never been a fan of Lady Gaga's. I'm sure she's a huge fan of mine, though. And another email, French kids would be healthier if they switched to American fries. Okay, and Tim, you write a gall dang book. But I'll read through it, see if I can pull anything out of your email. Okay. Rob Port coming up, and Chief Mike Wrighton joins Jay Thomas at 3 o'clock today on 970 WDAY. My love, can I just make some more romance with you? My love. 970 WDAY. You know, we may put this unlimited soda refills to fight obesity in France. We don't have a whole lot of time right now to get into it. But, you know, when you think about, Ben writes, an average restaurant cup is 20 ounces. So two refills are 60 ounces of Coke is 195 grams of sugar. That's over a cup. The recommended daily amount for men is 37.5 grams and 25 for women. Perhaps if there was a better way to illustrate the effect of that to people when they're filling up, kind of like the illustrations on the side of cigarette packs, but with diabetes, obesity, and heart disease. He's a smart one. That
Nobody's taking my soda away from me. There's a Dr. Pepper waiting for me in my office right now.
How many do you have in a day?
I don't.
Do you count?
Well, I try not to count.
Do you have like several? And then you have some
sometimes,
to get home too?
Yeah, well, not at work I usually only have 120 ounce.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just my average in a day. And then when I go home, sometimes I'll have a cup of Coke with supper or something like that. So I'm probably drinking around like 30 ounces of soda a day.
It's addictive. I think.
I love it.
I tried to get off it once. Lent is coming up. Maybe I'll try it again.
Yeah, no. I love my soda.
Do you know what Split, the movie Split, is about? It's the number one movie at the box office this weekend for the second week. It estimated earnings $26 million, total of $78 million, and it stars James McAvoy.
Yeah, it's a horror film centered around I'll call him a psychopath with dissociative identity disorder. He has multiple personalities.
Oh, wow.
And it's a very, very unrealistic and very, I'm trying not to use really bad words on the radio. It's a very awful portrayal of someone with dissociative identity disorder. It is in no way realistic.
All right. M. Night Shyamalan's movie. Let's see. A Dog's Purpose finished second, and Hidden Figures took third place this weekend and has made about $104 million. So there you go. Rob reports next. Thanks, Nat. We're back at 11 tomorrow.